Welcome to the 13th episode of the It's Been Said podcast. I'm your host, SAI Executive Director Lisa Ramey. Each show is dedicated to conversations on leadership as we further SAI's mission to support, encourage, and develop Iowa's educational leaders and learners. We're excited this month to welcome Justin Wagner, Superintendent of the Woodbine Community School District, and Ethan Weekman, Director of CAPS at Cedar Falls. Welcome, and thank you for agreeing to be guests on our show.
Excited to be here. Thanks, Lisa.
Yep, thanks for having us.
Yeah. So both of you probably know that last month we heard from Chris Byam, who works at Iowa Workforce Development, regarding the importance of registered apprenticeships, work-based learning, internships. And so today we're going to hear of two examples that bring this to life, like for our students in Iowa, the Ignite Pathways in Woodbine and the CAPS program at Cedar Falls. So Justin, let's start with you. Please share an overview of what the Ignite Pathways are and how they benefit students at Woodbine.
Great. Thanks, Lisa. Again, thanks for having me on. So Ignite Pathways has three lanes in it. We have a seventh and eighth grade, which is called our Spark Academy. And then we have a 9th through 12th grade lane, and then we have an adult education lane. And so what we really wanted to do as we created Ignite, and this is our, you know, it's really stood up completely when we opened the new building here in August, was really take almost every kind of traditional piece of education, look at what the relevant research said, and specifically around stick and stay ability of learning for kids, and then adapt and mold essentially a curriculum and a program from the ground up. And so Ignite Pathways is that. And so it really, every student has an individualized plan and IDP. And we really, you know, we really try to drill into every student from those that are going to a four-year university. In fact, we just had our stat team meeting and we talked about a student that's going to go to an Ivy League school. And then we have a student that would like to, you know, would like to work right now for the rest of their life, and they would be amazing at it. And so, you know, these IDPs are really kind of what we call one of our separators, and really getting to know the kids. And so that overview of Ignite, that IDP really kind of connects them all. And so we believe it benefits students because it really kind of drills into, we know more about their students on how they learn, what's important to them. And as we listen to business and industry, really now for about a decade, they've asked for really, you know, give us the will and we'll give you the skill. So we really try to focus on those trauma-informed care pieces and have partnered with IJAG to kind of help do some of those pieces and really respond to business and industry and really kind of take what the students do best and match it up with business industry or what they'd like to do, you know, post-secondary. So it's just kind of a really brief overview. We've taken every piece of, and we'll get into that, looks like more and some more questions, every piece of the public education experience, and we've flipped it. And we'll get into that a little bit more, but it's super exciting. It's as Ethan will probably know, and as you know, it can be daunting at times and a lot of work, but it's definitely different and unique and good for kids, so.
Yeah, well, that's exciting. I didn't realize that you also have the adult piece. So yeah, that'll be interesting to hear more about, you know, that whole just 7 through adult. So very exciting. Right. Yeah. All right, Ethan, let's go over to you in Cedar Falls. Share with our listeners an overview of the CAPS program and the goals that you have for the program.
Well, there are similar outcomes that what Justin just mentioned in that program, which is neat to hear their vision for it and how they're incorporating the different skills and their purpose of it. So I think it's probably a little bit different approach, but hoping to get similar outcomes, which I think is great. The more innovation that you have in this and the more programs that we have in this space, the better we're going to get better at it. So The idea of CAPS is it's a collaboration between business, community, and education, where we take students outside of the high school. So this is a high school specific program, and we fully immerse them into professional environments where they work on value added projects for different businesses and organizations throughout the Cedar Valley and actually beyond because of the ability to do remote work now with today's tools. The mission of it, as we look at our major clients, is preparing all students for their purpose. And there's three pieces to that that we hold true to when we make decisions within our program. And that preparation piece is similar to what Justin was talking about, is those skills that businesses are looking for in their workers. And we've heard the very same thing, is if you can get them to show up, show some resiliency, problem solve, collaborate with others, and communicate, we can train them to do what we need them to do to be successful in our organization. And so we do that preparation that's how we, by doing that, to fully immerse them into professional environments. And we feel like that's where that the learning, the deepest learning happens with those skill sets. So we got to get them out in the community and engage with other professionals and working on real problems, real projects for clients, and passion projects or different problems in the community. And then the other piece, so that's the preparation piece on those skills. And then the all means we wanted to create a program that was open to everybody and not limited to specific necessarily maybe industries, but the ability for everybody in there and be able to build out the capacity to do that, to serve everybody if we got to that level, and remove barriers. So there's no prerequisites to the program. You don't have to take certain classes to be able to be in it. Anybody can jump in at any time with it. And then the last piece is that purpose. And again, similar to what Justin said, is we try to get to know the individual learner. And when we think about our purpose, is what we like to say is we try to make Monday our best day of the week. So you're going to work a lot of your life, and hopefully you're able to find something that you're passionate about, that you're skilled at. Does the world need it? And then can you make money doing it? So we do these things called graduation stories, pathways to purpose, and we take them through that process throughout our program. So they have a better understanding what their next steps are. We always tell them, it's like, hey, this isn't pencil, not in permanent marker. As we know, as you guys all know, where we see our lives going, or we think it's headed, often by the time we get to the end of it, it has made a lot of different detours along the way. And that's good. That's a good thing. That's part of the life and learning. So in general, that's, as Justin said, that's kind of a high level overview of what we do.
Yeah. So for both of you, but Justin, we'll go back to you. What really inspired the development of the Ignite Pathways? Why did you do this at Woodbine?
Yeah, great question. So this is my fourth year in Woodbine. And when I came 4 years ago, they said, we really, you know, it's a rural community, a small community for those listening that maybe don't know, Southwest Iowa located. And they just, you know, they just really wanted a different experience for kids. And so I was so lucky, you know, when they said, hey, you know, this is what we want. They were building a building at the time. And it was a combination STEM center and a fitness center. And they said, we don't have any curriculum, but we really like, you know, to create one. And I was like, well, I'm like a mad hatter on that stuff. And I don't know if that's always good, you know. And so, you know, I'm kind of in the give back part of my career where I can take all these lessons I've learned, some mistakes I've made, and things that I know that would work, and kind of go, okay, now if you could start from scratch, you know, what would this thing look like? And we went to the programs across the, you know, across Iowa and across South Dakota. And we did a feasibility study, Lisa, and the feasibility study was critical for us. So in the school districts in Southwest Iowa, we determined how many CTE courses or current technical ed courses that were offered. And then we took the top 10 largest school districts in the state. Long story short, there was about 150 current technical ed courses offered in the largest school districts. And in our area, there's about 12. And so that was really kind of a moment for us. We also understood that in 1950, there was over 4,500 school districts in the state of Iowa. And as we started 4 years ago, there was about 327. Most of those are rural communities that are never coming back. And so it was a call to arms for transformation. And that was just really critical for us as this developed. And so fast forward now, to kind of 4 years. So we started with, you know, obviously you need people, program, and place, right? You got to have the, you know, to do it. And so we really started right away on that place. We wanted to have a place where kids could go and could really that captured the mission, vision, value, goals of Ignite. I mean, transforming educational experiences through business collaboration and involved learning that's our vision. And so fast forward, you know, we were able to pass a couple bonds and we were able to get philanthropically funds that were matched. We were able to get $3 million in state-of-the-art simulators. And so now we moved into the building, and now that development piece has moved into the stage where You know, we started with 16 students, and now we're at over 230. And so it's a regional concept that we really want, you know, kids just to have a unique and different experience for. So that development over time was really driven by that feasibility study and knowing that we wanted just a different experience for kids.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. Very intentional. That's what I hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of passion from the community too, right? So it wasn't just a one or two or three person show. It was a community effort.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. And Ethan, same. What inspired you to start a CAPS program, or for Cedar Falls to start a CAPS program?
Yeah, I'm glad you clarified that it was Cedar Falls, because to be honest, I had no idea what CAPS was when they approached me to start it. There's a funny story about that, but that takes a little while, so I'm gonna forego that. But from what I understand, in the early stages of it, was that the school board had approached the district team and basically said, Cedar Falls, being a college town and academics highly valued, that they were doing good with academics piece. We were meeting the metrics of ACT and GPA and number of students going to school, or the attendance rates, things like that on paper make you look like you're successful school district, which was good. Like that's something to be proud of as well. But they were also noticing through their own kids and other kids and parents they talked to that their kids were struggling when they were leaving high school with understanding what their next steps were and their why behind that. And then also they felt like some of those, what we call durable skills, that were lacking. So good communications, organization, problem solving, the grit, the resiliency, all of those things that you want in all of our students. They just felt like we needed to do a better job of that. And then there was also a piece with the workforce of, you know, a lot of people will say, well, Iowa, one of the disadvantages of Iowa is there's not mountains or oceans. And so how do we keep our best and brightest here? And how do we figure out a way to get them connected within our communities to know that there is some really good purposeful work that can be done here that can create a great livelihood? So all of that happened. They went around and checked out these different programs, and ultimately they ended up on partnering with the CAPS Network, which was a program that started out of Blue Valley, Kansas. And that's when they came to me and said, hey, would you like to start a CAPS program? That was in December and 2016. And they wanted us to start in January of 2017. And so there was a lot of onboarding that had to happen in a short amount of time. But I also think that's part of the beauty of it is, you know, if you're embedded in your community and you're able to find partners, and they had done some groundwork with some businesses that they were going to host us. So we didn't have a lot of overhead costs. I mean, we just needed to get an instructor and some students into the program and get rolling. And so we did. We had 13 in that January, that semester. And today we have, that was in one strand. Now we have six strands in Cedar Falls will serve around 210 within our program this year. But now there's 20 CAPS programs across the state that we've helped facilitate in some way or form. And 19 of those are rural. And so we're finding a lot of traction in the rural communities because of what Justin said. People have a lot of pride in their small town and they want to see it continue to flourish, and they should. And so when you don't have a big overhead cost, and you're embedding your students within a business within the community or some type of library or whatever bank or whatever it is, a space, you can get started on this type of stuff relatively quickly. So.
Yeah. You know, you both, I mean, Woodbine, you know, you are in the rural area, and then, Ethan, with you talking about how you've helped other CAPS programs around the state start, and you mentioned rural as well. One of the pieces, as I've been in this SAI role now for the last year and getting out and about and talking to administrators across the state, I hear from some administrators how difficult it is to have programs like this in the rural, because they don't see, there's not the businesses like around the large metros, and whether it's metro, you know, central Iowa or Waterloo, Cedar Falls, Iowa City, and so forth. But I'm hearing both of you talk about how about successful programs in rural areas. So reflect a little bit on that. How can others who aren't able to see how it can happen in a rural area, what needs to happen for them? What steps could they take to help move this type of learning forward for students?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I think, you know, especially in rural schools, you know, we're just fighting for every student, and it's really this kind of financial, you know, hurdles. And the first question, you know, I'll be honest, I mean, I don't think superintendents always keep their jobs for being innovative, right? You know, it's you want to be kind of steady Eddie, and we can do those things. I understand budgets very well. So it's a great question. And how can you do that and still be innovative? And I think you got to get a little lucky, right? You got to have a great community. I think you also have to give people, generally speaking, especially in our community, I'll just say that, you know, we are, you know, blue collar bootstraps folks. And I think school has been good for some, and they survived it. They just didn't thrive in it. And so I think we have an audience already ready to say, you know what, we're kind of ready to do something different. You know, we want it to be done well, we want it to be done thoughtfully, but we just want kids to retain the information. And we also, at the end of the day, we want school to be fun. And I know it's kind of just a generic thing to say, but we've seen the research on, you know, kids come in at kindergarten, you know, Sir Ken Robinson, and leaving as a senior, they just don't like school. And so, you know, we kind of focused in on that, the rural side, and just what would be fun at school. And we thought, you know, having a different experience. So we embed all of our core credits through our career and technical aid classes. So we flipped the entire model. We know that in the absence of relevance, the kids are going to forget what they just learned in 10 days. You know, that was the Harvard study. And so we just kind of took that as a foundational bedrock and said, what does help kids have stick and stay ability of information, and it's relevance. And so once we kind of bake that relevance piece in a rural community, and again, there's certainly some folks that up front were kind of hesitant and, you know, kind of had some great questions. And it's always an ongoing process, but I think getting those core credits into, you know, in the program was important. And then if you zoom out, that's a tactical, back up to the strategic. I think it has to be a really definable and clear vision. You know, what do we want to do? And in our case, it wasn't just about the school. It's about the community and the communities around us, right? There's so many great communities around us, not just here in Woodbine. And so, you know, I think the difference maker for us and how we've, any success that we've had, has been really kind of setting up something that's very different, and it connects to, you know, our end user, which is our kids, and ultimately creates a better product of being able to retain information and have an incredible experience along the road. You know, we've talked about the $3 million in simulators that we have, and those things just bring it to life. You know, there's industry that don't have the simulators that we have, and that it's exciting for kids. And so, you know, that piece of it to me, Lisa, is important in terms of, you know, for small schools, is, you know, find something that's, you know, unique and different, make sure it makes sense, it's relevant, and then make it exciting and fun.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Ethan, anything to add?
Well, I think when you look at this, if you just look at a business sense, it's return on investment. And so I know there's been a push, at least from the state level, for these, what I would say, like career centers. And so career academies, and Justin, I'm not sure if that's how you would label your program. It sounds like you have kind of a hybrid of both there when you look in 7 through 12. But you know, when you go and do that, and especially in rural, if you try to specialize too much, and I understand the idea of, we can get them so many credits and get them started on their life, they're worth saving them money. And the challenge is like, it's going to be hard for public education to be the specialist for every single career that's out there. And so when you narrow down it, make this career too specific, there's only a certain number of students that are actually going to engage in that program. So I would say it's one of the things we found a lot of traction with our rural communities was a couple things. One, we made it, the overhead is real low to get in there. You don't need a building necessarily or equipment to get things started. They're nice to have, there's no doubt about it, but they're not necessary to get a quality program going. The other thing is we made a program that was available to everybody. And so regardless if I want to go be a lawyer or if I want to go be a contractor, you know, a plumbing contractor, we have everything in between that can be housed under one program. And then the question people would ask me, well, how do you do that? And this is what we focus on. So we're not chasing credentials, and we're not necessarily chasing college credit. What we are chasing is the development of those durable skills. So in general, those are pretty universal, no matter what industry you go into. So if you create a program where you're developing communication, problem solving, critical thinking, project management, teamwork, those type of things, and if those are what you're focused on, that's what you're training, while the students are doing a lot of wayfinding in the community, then that's a program that's going to have value for everybody, no matter what industry they're looking into. Now, you got to backfill things. We do a lot of career interest interviews, and sometimes a small rural district doesn't have, I don't know if I want to be an aerospace engineer. Well, not every community does. And in Cedar Falls, we're fortunate in Waverly, there's actually an aerospace company up there that makes components for the machines that carry space shuttles to the launch pad. And so if we have someone that's there, we connect them to that company, and a lot of times through Zoom, and we just help them figure out how to use LinkedIn and connect with these people and just have a conversation. At the same time, we're developing these skills, working on projects that are based in their community that's having real impact for their community. So there's a ton of community buy-in, and they're still getting to test the waters in all these other industries that may not be available right there in their community. So the broader net that you make with value, like if your focus is on, we got to get credentials and we got to get them 2 years ahead in some specific career pathway, that's going to be really hard to replicate across the state of Iowa, especially in rural Iowa, because the cost is just too much for the number of students you're going to get in there. But if you broaden it and you focus on those durable skills, which every industry needs, and all of our citizens need to be successful community members, then you can do it.
What are the, give examples of the pathways. So at Ignite, what are those pathways that students can participate in, Justin?
So we hit all six of the career clusters in Iowa, and so we offer over 80 courses, within those courses. And again, kind of one of the features of, and really Ethan talked about the exposure of it. So we really try to get those exposure pieces in the 7th and 8th of Spark Academy, but also in the 9-12, one of our bedrock beliefs is that one out of every 2 days has to be outside of the classroom. It just, you know, I think when we've done in career and technical ed is sometimes we get kids that learn by doing, or just kids that like something different. And what we do is we put them in kind of right back in desks and rows. And so that's a foundational piece. So you could get everything from information technology to earning your CDL, which we've had a number of folks earn their CDL in live, you know, kind of live in person right there in front of us, which is cool. We have students that earn their aviation, their private pilot's license, which is fantastic. So we have aviation, we have all six, obviously, career pathways, and then within there, up to 80 courses. And we have everything, and again, we have everything from, the business and industry, modeling, entrepreneurship, ag, STEM, residential construction, welding. I mean, there's just a, if you name the pathway. So what we did, if this helps answer the question, Lisa, we asked the students what they're interested in, and then we went and created the class. And so we just know, they make that voice and choice now has had a deeper ownership and a deeper embedment for them. And so that's been a difference for us.
Yeah. And I want to ask you, Justin, a clarifying question. You mentioned getting their credits within these pathways. So are they getting some of their core credits needed for graduation, like a math? Is that combined in some of these, or English?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And the students get to choose, and parents get choice in this too. So if parents, in some instances, because they can get all four core credits, so they could take a welding class and get math, science, social studies, language arts. We have defensive learning weekly in front of an authentic audience. And so they have no more than 5 minutes, because what we found is that, you know, you can talk a lot, but we really want you to be efficient and effective. And so at the end of the day, the parents then get to choose. So some students will take ELA through their ag class, for example, or their IT class, but they also can do it in a, what do we call a traditional setting back in their home school district, just to double up to make sure that they're getting those. And that's a parent's choice. Some parents have done that, some parents haven't. So yes, they get their core credits. And then we focus in on those, the durable skills that Ethan talks about, which I think is fantastic, the work that CAPS is doing. We focus those on during advisory time on a daily basis to make sure that we're really listening to business and industry.
Yeah, that's nice. Nice for students to have that voice and choice. Ethan, I know there's a variety of pathways through CAPS, but I'm going to ask you to focus specifically on the teacher pathway. Talk a little bit about that to our listeners. Why did you start that pathway? How has it impacted Cedar Falls?
So there's a couple things on here, and I want to backtrack a little bit, and then I'll get to the education one, which actually is one of our most specific pathways, ironically, that we're touching on. Much like Justin said, we look at the six CTE industry areas, and that's where we've tried to have that broad spectrum. And as we've been talking about, student agency is super important here. And I also think life experience is very important, and realize like these kids are young. And so their life experience is pretty limited, and to creating programs that allow students to explore and to be able to pivot based on experiences. You know, I don't know how many times more than Megan, who our education instructor would like to admit, that she gets someone into teaching in her teaching program and they find out they don't like kids. Right. And so, well, that's a problem if they're there for three periods of 2 hours a day for a whole semester, if we're not able to pivot. And help them start, because a lot of times they're seniors. And so if I find out I don't like kids and I'm in this education program, but I want to figure out what I do like, we got to be able to pivot. You got to create programming that allows for that to change lanes. And we high five that. I mean, I know a lot of people talk about that. Like, that's a high five when we recognize things that we don't want to do. But most of our programs are pretty broad. So when you think about medical, we think about, we have a construction and trades that we partner with Habitat for Humanity on. We have business, we have an engineering, advanced manufacturing strand, but our rural programs just have CAPS, right? Because they don't have enough people within their own school district. Sometimes these school districts have 25 people in their class that we're talking about here. Some of them up to 80. Mm-hmm. So they just have CAPS in general, and they go through and develop those durable skills and do a lot of wayfinding that way, in a general course. So I'm getting to your education piece, but I also wanted to clarify for some of our listeners, because they often think, well, it's Cedar Falls, they're big enough, they can have all these strands. Well, rural Iowa, they have CAPS, and you're still focusing on the durable skills, and you're still focusing on the wayfinding piece. Education, though, is something obviously there's that students are interested in, because that's what they know for a lot of their lives, right? So there's people coming out thinking, hey, I found a lot of maybe success in education, or I identified a lot in my experience there, and I want to give back to my community. I want to give back to students and work with students. I find a lot of purpose in that. There's one piece to have an education program. The other thing was we're lucky to have the University of Northern Iowa in our community, which is a premier education training program, teacher training program. So as you know, when you look at each community, you got to look at what industries are there. And that helps you, and Justin made that point too. That helps you, you know, makes each program unique, is what industries are there, what opportunities are local, and then figure out a way to partner with them. So we'd be crazy not to partner with the College of Ed at the University of Northern Iowa. So we did. And then also there's a huge teacher shortage. So we also feel like we're called to bring in our underrepresented populations into the program. And, you know, to do that, we've got to get connected with those students earlier, and help them recognize that you may not see yourself represented in teachers right now, but you could be the one that's going to be the representation for future students. And here's how we can do it. And then we support and help them develop. And so that way they can see themselves and be called to do that. And so with the education program actually is set up to, basically it's a K-12 approach, K-16, because we partner with UNI on it. But we have Tiger Pals that they start off in junior high, and then early in their high school careers, test the waters of mentoring younger students in the elementaries. And then they can get into their CAPS Ed program, if they feel like that's of value to them. And so then they go through CAPS Ed. And if they go through there, then, you know, we help support them throughout their college. And then the hope is, as you guys all know, relationships matter. And so if they start to get connected with a face in the community or a school district that they really like, that we're hoping is that they come out of college and say, I can see myself working for Cedar Falls Schools. And it's one of our best recruiting pieces. And we've seen that over the years as we're into our seventh year, paying dividends for that. Not only are they well prepared because of the experiences that they've had early on, but they're committed. And, you know, that staying power makes a big difference too for our district.
Yeah, definitely. So a recruitment tool it is in some aspects.
Well, I think, yeah. And I think Justin's going to talk. I mean, I'm sure the industry people that they're partnering with, it's our students come out, especially when you think in construction and trades, that's when we're really focused. That can be a very intimidating industry, especially if your dad or mom are not in it already. And so to go in there fresh and not know a single person, and you're going to go into, as I'm an 18-year-old and I'm going to go right into that work, that's a pretty tough ask. And, you know, again, we talked to a lot of industry people that are in there, our contractors, and they'll say, hey, I had this 18-year-old show up, not necessarily from our program. I would like to say we're 100%. We're not. There's some that did not, and we're trying to improve on that. But they would come and put their application in, and they would get an interview, and they would show up. And it was happening. I mean, that was happening a lot within that industry. And the speculation, and the based on the research we've done with our students, is it's intimidating to show up there, not to know anybody. And then all of a sudden, I'm going to go start working here and may not have a ton of experience. And, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. And so we're trying to get people to realize that these are human beings, develop those relationships, start their networking early on. So when they come out of high school, that they have these connections, familiar faces, and it's not as intimidating to go in and say, yeah, I'm going to work here.
Justin, could you share some success stories, examples of, you know, students who have gone through programming and either, you know, help them determine, yes, this is where I want to be in life and what I want to do. Or as Ethan kind of noted, sometimes you find out, hey, that isn't what I thought it was going to be. And ooh, I want to take a different approach, different pathway.
Yeah, knowing what you don't want to do in life is as important as knowing what you do want to do, right? And so, yeah, that exposure piece is huge. There's a lot. It's a great question. There's so many individual student success. We want individuals, we want their lives changed. We really do. And I'll use one. The governor had asked us to come to her State of the State address. I think it was, you know, the year before last, right, when we were kind of in year two, and she had come out and just, you know, supported us, which we appreciated. And we brought a student with us, and his name was Bernie Nelson. And Bernie's just a great, you know, great kid. And he went with us, and I looked over to my right during her speech when she was talking, mentioned Ignite, and he was, you know, crying. And I looked at Bernie and I said, what's going on? And he said, you know, this program has changed my life. And, you know, you kind of think about it, and sometimes you hear those statements and it's like, okay, there's some, you know, maybe some marketing PR, but what we're finding is that's all across the up. Our system was so broken, like our system as a whole, for some of these kids that they had been, you know, how long do you have to tell somebody they're not good at something before they really start believing it? It's the old, you know, if you judge a fish, how they try and climb a tree, they're always going to fail. And that moment stuck with me. And there's just so many names that pop into my head for students. I'll use another one. There was a student, and I'll leave the student's name out, but he was somebody who, you know, had come into the district. He had really struggled his whole life. Had been bullied and kind of hit all those boxes, and hit Ignite and is during our welding program. And it was right during the time at Tommy Gate, because we have a local distributor, Tommy Gate, creates the lift gates. And they said, it was during COVID, and they said, look, we need MIG welders. And so we said, okay, well, we'll create a program for you. And so we came back and we said, well, in 18 months and $7,200, we could have some MIG welders. And they said, yeah, you're really not listening, Justin. We need MIG welders now. And so we went back and we sharpened the pencil again. We call it our napkin conversations, how we start all of our presentations. And we went back and just wrote it on a napkin. What are the skills? What can you do with what you know? What are the basic skills MIG welders need? And, you know, really about 4 months later, we produced six students, and four of them worked there long term and are still working there in some capacity, and a huge success run. One of them was the student I'm talking about. And it's just, they can't run their shift without them. And so you kind of start looking at those things and just how we kind of pivoted and moved. And it kind of harkens back, Lisa, to your initial kind of introduction to work-based learning. And, you know, we had an advisory committee this summer that did a lot of good work. And we're taking those kids. We don't ask kids anymore, you know, what you want to be when you grow up. I'm not even sure I know, Lisa, and what I want to be when I grow up. And so it's really unfair to ask a seventh grader. But what we can do is expose them to all these other things. And at the end of the day, we know that some kids value working. And so we're taking the core credit to work-based learning. And we believe that there's value in kids who can show up at 6 a.m. and stay till 6 p.m. And they can finish products, and they can do two things at once, and they can work in a team. And we believe that that's communication skills, and we believe those meet ELA standards. And so we have our core validators that push out into the field, you know, that are licensed professionals. And so that helps some of those successes, right? That helps those kids see that what the skill set and the talent they have. We also don't say, are you talented? We know you're talented. We want to know how you're talented. And we think kids that can fix an engine are talented. And so those are the kind of things that when we push out in that work-based learning piece, those are our success stories, because the kids now for the first time are saying, oh, you mean that's a talent. That's a talent to be able to fix an engine, right? In the past, it was always those kids that, well, you do your core first, and if you have time, you get to go do music, you get to go do welding, you get to go do ag. And so we flipped that whole model. You know, it's really got to be a passion, you know, and that agency, as Ethan talked about. If the kids are interested, the information's going to last longer. And I'll just touch base on one last piece of this. You know, this past year was a combination between Woodbine Community Schools and Ignite. Our behaviors dropped 167%. So I just want to stop and pause for a second, because I had to go back and look in our conditions of learning survey and go back in the system to make sure there wasn't an error. And that 167% stood tall. And the reason is because now kids are getting choice, and they're getting to choose what they want to do. And those core credits are now sticking and staying longer because they have a relevance. And so that was just really, that was an aha moment for me, that it's just, where we see kids having success, it's where we've just changed the system. And so it's a great question. It's really what we're all about I appreciate you asking, because kids and impacting their lives is really what our focus is.
Yeah, that's powerful, powerful. Ethan, I imagine you have similar stories.
Yeah, I think there's commonality here. Like when you have student agency and you have buy-in, there are these great stories that come along with it. You know, I think about, depending on who the stakeholder is, where that story lies. For instance, I just came in, watched a young man and observed from a distance as they were working with a client doing their discovery meeting. And I could see the light shining in his eyes about how excited he was. He was totally engaged in it. The unique thing about this young man is he hadn't been to school regularly for 2 years. He has high anxiety and has had trouble getting to school. And in fact, he hasn't been coming to the traditional school, which is another topic what we're trying to work with him, but has made it to CAPS every day. And mom and dad are thrilled that he's coming half the day. And we're trying to figure out how to get him to come the other part of the day. He finds a lot of value in CAPS, and he sees the value in it. And it's not because CAPS is easy, because that's not the case. We have people getting up in front of, they have to get up in front of an authentic audience, in front of business people, and give pitches and get critical feedback. And it's really hard. And they have to meet deadlines because they got clients on the other end, but he's loving it. He loves the challenge of it. And to Justin's point, when we've talked to him about it, it's, and he'll say, it's because you guys focus on who I am and not what I have to do to graduate. And he goes, I really appreciate that. He goes, you see me as a person and you value my skills that I have. And we're not only focused on making sure we're meeting the courses required to graduate. And that's where his perceived anxiety is coming from. So there's that piece. There's a piece where we had a young lady came in and said, I was going to be a truck driver. And we're like, what in the world? Where did that come from? That's kind of a unique thing for that lady to say that. And we found out because her uncle owned a trucking company. Okay, makes complete sense. All right, let's go look at that. We went down the line and she realized, I don't want to be a truck driver. But that was all she really had thought about. And in that process, she decided she might want to help people. We got her to go in to see open heart surgery. She scrubbed in at 6 a.m. just to observe it, came back super excited, went into nursing, and now she's a nurse at, I think it's Mary Greeley in Ames. I think that's the name of the hospital there. And, you know, we talked to her dad. What did that mean to you? She goes, you have no idea the amount of money you saved us, because she was dead set on going into truck driving, into the trucking company. And they were like, we'd be okay with that, but we didn't think that was a good fit for her. And so there was that piece. And then we have the project itself. We had a young man that worked on a step stool. We've mentioned this in several different settings, but it's what can happen when you're engaged with your community. We have an advanced manufacturing company here called Crichton Engineered Metals, and they do metal spinning. They do some really neat stuff for different major industrial companies across the world. And they came to us and put this step stool on it. And they basically said, hey, we want you to make it more appealing and more cost affordable for us, because they were losing money with their client selling the step stool, but they were selling other things to this client, and that they were making enough money that it was kind of a nuisance. And so that's great for us. Like, it's not project critical. It's 8, 9, 10. They handed us the step stool. We thought, who's going to want to design a step stool? We thought at first this wasn't going to be very attractive, but we had a couple of people that were interested in mechanical engineering, picked it up. Well, it turns out the step stools goes on to cryogenic freezing, big cryogenic freezers, that it's an important piece. It's a safety piece. It attaches to them. So people that are stepping in this are carrying things like Ebola or the coronavirus at times, and putting in these big cryogenic freezers. So it was actually a big deal. And in the process, they were able to design a product that was more affordable, more eye appealing, and sturdier, so that they brought this, the leading company in cryogenic freezing materials in the world, they brought a representative out, and they had to pitch it. They pitched their prototype to them, and ended up selling it. And now that product, after safety testing, is being still developed to this day and shipped around the world and to all these cryogenic freezers. So that company got, they're getting the ROI on that was, they're making money on that step stool. They got to engage with future potential talent, which ultimately ended up in one of the associates started doing side work for him while he went to college. And then when he went to Iowa State, the engineering team at Crichton came back and said, we can't lose this guy. So they came back and said, hey, we'll pay for your last 2 years of college if you come work for us for 2 years. And so he started last January. So he was one of our first ones. He's gone through, started last January. He's been working there ever since. We have a really cool picture because now he is a client on projects for our current CAPS associates. So he did one last year where he's the client. So full circle, you're basically creating this ecosystem within your communities. And that's the power of it. When you engage with your community and you partner with your businesses, and they get to have some ownership of the process.
Yeah, so that's a good segue, Ethan. So I'm hearing a lot about, you know, community support. So what does the community support look like from, whether it's families or local businesses, both in Cedar Falls for your CAPS program and at Woodbine for your Ignite Pathways?
Well, in Woodbine, it wouldn't be possible. We wouldn't be able to do what we're doing without the community. And so it's a public-private partnership, Ignite Pathways. And it's help run by a 501c3 of extremely successful leaders all across the spectrum. And so their insight and their ability to grow and really look at this from a business perspective has been critical. And so from Woodbine's perspective, that business partnership and the business leadership and expertise and guidance has been critically important to us and continues to, you know, evolve our programming. So we're faster and funnier, as they say. You know, we really want our programming to not be lockstep with the traditional kind of way we've always done things. You know, we always say, if you put good people in a bad system, the bad system wins every time. It just does. So we want on-ramps and off-ramps for kids. We want to start classes in the middle of February that get done in the middle of March. We want to start in June and go through July. And we want to start September 1st and be done September 30th with the certification. And so we really, those partners in our local community have helped us. Our community here in Woodbine passed a bond issue that helped us build the building, Ignite Pathways building. That's huge, Lisa. It got almost 70% approval. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, just a community that's been we've been so blessed. We talk about being personalized and unparalleled. And we use that a lot in our mission statement. And so the community has been absolutely, you know, a game changer for us. And what happens, and Ethan kind of hit on this too, once people start believing in something, once they can see it has value, once you can see that, you know, the kids are having a different experience, this thing happens. And the best way I describe it is lightning in a bottle, but we're so much better because of the sum of our parts, and we ever would have been alone. And now it just takes off. And so now everywhere you go, somebody's saying, hey, we should start this class. Or, you know what, I wanted to go to space when I was in high school. And so what are we doing? And now we're starting to put together plans for a, you know, kind of a space a regional academy. And so those things just start to grow and they happen. The other thing that I think has been important for us is timing. COVID was obviously horrible for so many reasons I don't need to get into. But what happened for rural communities is people could start working from home. So there was a real revitalization that happened. We were very fortunate to get a $20 million grant. So we had 40 new homes built with the support of Iowa Economic Development. And so what happened was now people are saying, oh, I can choose where I want, you know, where I want my kid to raise my kids, where maybe I didn't have that parameters before. And I want some of that small town feel, but I really want the value of a big city in terms of education. And so our community coming together has really allowed that whole kind of ecosystem, as Ethan put, I love that word, you know, to kind of come together. And it's been really exciting. It's really cool. And we're just at the start, Lisa. So we hope to have a lot more bigger chapters, but we've had a couple good ones here.
It's fantastic.
You know, one other thing is again, depending on how your program is, how you operate, you know, there's basic tenants that people put in, there's physical spaces that maybe you're talking about. But one of the things that's core to any CAPS program, at least in the state of Iowa, is that we really work with our instructors and our programs to say, look, you're the guide on the side, not the sage on the stage. And what we mean by that is you're facilitating learning. You're not the all knower of learning. And so when we hire people, we're not necessarily looking for technical experts in certain specific fields. We're looking for people that are good coaches and that can develop people. Because one of the mantras is, even if you do know it, we want you going out in the community. And well, we're already based in the community, but we want you reaching out into different businesses and organizations and professionals and mentors and the wisdom that's out in your community and bring them to our program. And the reason why we want to do that is, we want them to know what we're doing, right? We want to expand our reach. We want them to be aware of the cool things that are happening within our program and how we're training them. But we also want that to be, it serves as like a career interest interview when you bring someone else in to talk about whatever topic you're talking about, because then they can talk about what's their career. What is it that they exactly do? But one of the most important pieces is that wayfinding piece. How did you go from a 16-year-old to where you're at today? What was your career pathway, which is a great way, because sometimes we see people, a CEO or president, a business owner, and it's hard to imagine that they were a snot-nosed punk 14-year-old that had no clue what they were going to do with their life at some point. But somewhere along the line, they got there, sometimes by luck, sometimes by, you know, planning and organizing. But hearing those creates a ton of value. It humanizes that process. And so we're very intentional about reaching out. And, you know, sometimes we can buy equipment, but we choose not to, because if we buy the equipment, then we silo and then we're not going out and reaching out. If it's available in our community, then we want to reach out to that community and say, hey, we'd love to partner you on this. We've got this project. We need this piece of equipment. Is there a way that we could come out and learn more about your industry and your company at the same time, potentially use this? And a lot of times they'll say yes now. And as Justin said, because before, what are you talking about? You want high schoolers in here? No, we can't do that. It's a lot of legal issues. We can't do that. No way. But now that they know CAPS and understand the different things with legal, because it's actually a lot easier than people say it is, thanks to our legislation that allows for work-based learning to happen for people under 18. That's a key point to all of this. But so that piece opens up, and how do people partner with our community? We hope in every way possible, because that makes our program much stronger in multiple different avenues. So we, a lot of times, will the tip of the iceberg where we start off, come in and do mock interviews with them, with the associates. We call them associates, student associates, and work with them that way. Career interest interviews. We have someone that may be interested in being a dentist, and can they sit down and just talk to you how you got to there? What made you think you wanted to be a dentist in the first place? You know, those conversations. Tours with the facility. Those are always welcome as we continue to test the waters on different things that they may or may not want to do. But some of the bigger pieces, commitments, would be like a host site. And so, to Justin's point, when we first asked about host sites, hey, would you host a team of high schoolers in your building? That was a big ask. there was a lot of hesitation with that, especially at an engineering firm, which where we were at first time. I still remember a conversation. They thought we were going to do like an internship. So my first conversation out of the math classroom with this engineering firm called Viking Pump, or original host site, they said, yeah, I think we found 3 to 5 engineers that we can host your associates and they can and work with them on these projects. And I said, well, that's great, but we have 13. And you should have seen their eyes. I mean, you imagine engineers, they like things planned out and very organized. And this is what we're going to do. And they're like, we don't have 13. And they said, well, that's okay. We said, that's okay, because we have a facilitator that their job is to help. All we need is the space and we need to be visible. So they're in a professional environment. We're not looking for internships. We're not looking for one-to-one placements with this. And that you could feel the air like relaxed, like, oh, okay. All right. Sounds good. Because the ownership of it, as our business people like to say, we like to be the grandparent, not the parent in this relationship. And that pulls a lot of dividends for us when we share that out. So once Viking showed that it was possible and that, you know, their burning didn't burn down or their building didn't burn down, other people started like, hey, we want high schoolers in our buildings. We want them to see what we're doing. And they see that as a competitive advantage in some way. And we had one person say, we're committed to CAPS because you guys bring energy in and our employees love seeing the younger generation in there. And that's a good testament of our program and to that generation. And so they want us to continue to be in there and they see value at that way. So the host site's one, but the real best way, the big key to our program is those projects. They're the fuel to our program. And if we don't have real world projects with businesses, we can't develop the skills that we want to at a high level. And because there's just a sense of urgency when there's a real client on the other end and it has real impact in your community and these expectations. So that's the one where we work to a lot is how do we get a high quality projects coming in our doors, because those bear the most fruit.
Yeah. Wow. This has been an awesome time for me this afternoon here. Couple last questions for both of you. So Justin, when you think about the Ignite program, how does it contribute to the overall educational landscape, but also the economic development of Woodbine and surrounding communities? And then the same in Cedar Falls with CAPS for Ethan.
Yeah. So in Woodbine, you know, we were fortunate. I want to give a shout out to the Iowa Department of Education, who allowed us I believe it was the only waiver at the time anyway, a seat time waiver. So, you know, we waived the 200 minutes per week. And so what happened then is it just gave us this aperture to kind of look at what would that landscape, educational landscape look like if we just focused on learning? That was it. Not teaching, not did we teach it, but did they learn it? And what's the best way for them to learn it? And so this is how we came up with Ignite and the core credit concept. And so, you know, the impact of on the economy or the impact on the development of the community, you know, certainly we were fortunate to have the 40 new homes built. So now you had, you know, folks that could come in and the number one thing, you know, that people look for from a real estate perspective is, you know, education. You know, it's right at the top. You know, do we have a great education? And so I think the timing for that was good. And I think when people can get the security of a small community, but also the transformational ideas and opportunities of a big community, you know, they think of Ignite and Woodbine. And so, you know, we've seen that bear fruit. We're going to wait till October 1st. But Lisa, I need to do a little more research on the history of Woodbine's enrollment. But when I got here, you know, 4 years ago, we were upside down and open roll in and out, obviously had more open roll out than in. And certainly that's flipped now to the point where I think I'm saying we'll have the largest increase in student enrollment potentially in the history of a school district. And so, you know, I think, you know, those are economic impacts, obviously, because those students are either coming to get educated here, but also their families are coming here as well. And so it's been a mutually exclusive relation, a mutually symbiotic, sorry, relationship between the business community and the school district from that perspective.
Yeah. Justin, I appreciate you bringing up, you know, the waiver with the Department of Education, because I think sometimes people feel like some of those requirements are barriers. And so then it stops conversations. So Thank you for thinking outside the box and making it happen for students there in Southwest Iowa. So fantastic. Ethan, how about you? What have you seen as far as that impact economic development educationally in Cedar Falls?
Well, and I would say, you know, we have the CAPS program, Cedar Falls, but there's, like I said, there's 19 other ones in the state of Iowa. And so I think what I would say is going well economically for Cedar Falls, I would also say is going well for them as well. Anytime we can keep our best and brightest here, that gives us a competitive advantage. And being able to connect them and build those relationships and seeing the opportunities that are local. And sometimes they don't even know, like, there's some really great industries in your backyard. And if school districts aren't out there and exposing those opportunities, it's going to be hard for students to even know that that's there. And so if you're embedded in community and you're intentional about connecting with your different businesses and different organizations, I know we've shown that those relationships that are developed and those realizations of, you know, the successful livelihood and with purpose can happen locally. That's what pays a lot of dividends for us and gets a lot of our students, which are happy. For most of our students, they want to be able to stay close to mom and dad at some point, close to their family, right? There's always going to be the ones that want to go take off and go to these, you know, big cities and big dreams. And that's great. They should. They absolutely should. But I will argue that Iowa is one of the greatest places in the U.S. and maybe even in the world to raise a family. And we're hoping that at some point that they can look back at these experiences and recognize, like, hey, I can go home and I can have this be around my kids can see their grandparents on a regular basis, and I can find a passion and purpose in what I do locally and in those communities. And so when you do that, coupled with we're developing those skills that our industry partners are saying, right? You know, we have everywhere, like I said, from all of the industries, CEOs, presidents, owners of companies, they keep coming back and saying the same thing. We've got to get better at communication skills. We've got to get better at getting people to show up to work. We got to get better at people dealing with tough situations and hard things and being able to navigate those things. And so anything we can do to develop those skills makes them a more efficient and effective employee, which ultimately helps our community. So, you know, when you couple those things with relationships and giving them the skills and helping them understand their next steps, it's a great ecosystem. And you're looking at our education as part of the community and not just a silo.
Yeah. Thank you for that. All right. What advice would you give to your colleagues or other communities who would like to implement something similar to either the CAPS program or the Ignite Pathways, any career-focused type initiative? What advice would you give? Justin?
Just go. You know, we had Doug Reeves come out and talk, and he just said, you know, people will analyze this thing, and you got to do planning groups for a couple of years, and you got to do this. And he just said, in the long run, the research is clear. You got to go. You just got to go. Take the first step, you know, inch by inch, lies the inch, yard by yard, lies pretty hard. So just start, just go, and it'll get there. I promise you, it'll save you two things that are most important to you from an administrator's perspective: time and money. You know, we've been able to save money, put money back in our teachers' pockets, and we've been able to generate more time for learning experiences for kids. So I'd say just go. And it's really about change. You know, that change management piece of this is huge. We've been fortunate to get, you know, a lot of awards and some recognition for our staff, and they've done an incredible job. The one I'm probably the most proud of is we were just named by the Des Moines Register as one of the best places to work in Iowa. The reason I'm proud of that is because it's from our staff to a third party vendor in an anonymous survey. That's lots and lots and lots of questions. And I was kind of surprised the first year, to be honest with you, because we'd gone through a lot of change, and it's such a tribute to our staff and them embracing it. And I think if you can create that vision, and Ethan has mentioned this too, if you can show that value, people will rally. They'll rally behind it. They want great things for their kids too. You know, I think the last piece that kind of I would say on my end is, you know, find people that have a similar why, you know, and if somebody is incongruent with that why, help them, listen to them, support them, show them the research, And at the end of the day, there's a lot of great people out there that have been in some bad systems, if I'm being vulnerable, and it's not bad people. And so once you get that system that has their why, man, they come to life. And so align yourself with those folks that have a similar why, and the rest will take care of itself. So I'll circle back with the same thing I said in the beginning. I would encourage everyone to just go, you know, and it tends to work out.
Ethan?
Well, Justin threw in some research in there, some quotes from people. That was a pretty good summation of it. So I don't have a ton to add to that. And I'm going to summarize a little bit is, and one thing we talk with people that come visit and they say, well, how did you make this happen? And each one of our CAPS programs is a little bit different story. So what we like to tell them is like, if your why is strong enough, your how will come. And so as you talked about earlier was you find these roadblocks, and if your why is strong enough, you're going to figure out a way around it or right through it. And figuring out what's good for your community and what type of program that you want and what type of experiences, what your outcomes are going to be, what your vision is, get enough people on your boat as or on the bus, or as Justin had mentioned, is get them on your bus and then move forward and adapt and overcome as needed. So, and I also think one thing about Iowa is super unique. I think based on what I'm hearing around the nation, there's a lot of really cool programs going on, and they have their own authentic feel based on what their community needs. And again, I keep going back to that's a good thing. I think where we get in trouble is where we say there's one size fits all and start saying, well, if they did it over there, we need to replicate that to every single school district around the state. Well, that's where we get into trouble. And that's where we get, you know, that's where traditional education sometimes gets in a bind too. So we got to keep that in mind is let's celebrate the uniqueness of each of the programs for each of the communities, and let's continue to find ways to make it happen in all the communities around the state.
Wow. Well, thank you both again for one, giving of your time. You're busy people, and you took an hour out of your day to talk with me about the great programming that you have. And thank you for being leaders and doing what's right for students and thinking outside the box to really meet students where they're at and really redefine what education can look like. So thank you so much. Be sure to join us for the next episode as we welcome Prairie City Monroe's high school principal, Kristen Sosa, and Sam Pohl, instructional coach. Kristen and Sam will share with listeners how restorative justice helps strengthen relationships and build community while resolving problems that have caused harm or damaged relationships.